Good evening. This is Lou Cavalli with the Divided Kingdom. It's a kaleidoscope of disquieting news headlines today, July 22nd, 2020. From naturalnews.com, we have these headlines. California apartment building locked down under mandatory quarantine of all 78 residents with mandatory COVID-19 testing. All key cards deactivated, security guards posted at entrances during the lockdown. We'll tell you more about that later.
Oh, that's really interesting news, Lou. Yes, this is Elizabeth Cuffett-Caverly, the co-host of The Divided Kingdom. These headlines are really something, Lou.
Yes, they are. Here's a few more. Connecticut Public Health Laboratory confirms nationwide coronavirus tests are flawed, creating huge spike in false positives. New Delhi's infection rate now exceeds New York City. Antibodies found in nearly 25% of all residents. Implantable microchips could soon be voluntarily, and that's the quiz in quotes, voluntarily injected into state government employees. That coming from Michigan. We're all slaves. China's, and help me out, Elizabeth, I believe we said this is Uyghurs, is that right?
Yes, and those are the Muslim people who are being so mistreated, we hear.
Yes, China's Uyghurs, forced labor slaves, are making the face masks worn by Americans. There is a Holocaust taking place in China right now, and the world is silent, including the NBA. And in that same vein, we have the headline, Rogue Drone Pilots Footage Resurfaces, shows China herding humans from cattle cars. Amplifying that, we have this article by Jared Harris from the Western Journal, Rogue Drone Pilots Footage Resurfaces. Footage linked from China revealed a grim scene to the world, all but confirming the communist juggernaut's cultural genocide against a minority group in the country. The clip, seemingly taken from a drone, was first released in September 2019 by the YouTube account War on Fear. In the video, blindfolded and bound men are seen being herded from train cars like an image out of 1930s Germany. War on Fear claims the chip was taken in China's Xinjiang Uyghur autonomous region. At least one expert has confirmed this is likely the case, according to CBS News. The recording serves as a haunting reminder that state-sanctioned evil, like that of the Holocaust, still exists in the world today. Shortly after the footage was originally published, the global coronavirus pandemic put all eyes on China and a sickening treatment of people living under the ruling Communist Party. Now, the same video has resurfaced and is making the rounds on Twitter. It has racked up nearly 6 million views by Saturday, more than six times what the original YouTube video has. The resurfaced clip is also gaining the attention of the media and politicians. The video has resurfaced amid shifting global relations with China. The initial coronavirus outbreak allowed to run loose under the lies and deceit of China and the World Health Organization has cracked open the friendly facade of the global economy's manufacturing linchpin. Now the world is becoming more aware of China's evil deeds every day. One of the communist giant's most nefarious acts is its ongoing treatment of the Uyghur ethnic minority. Roughly 11 million Uyghurs live in western China, according to the BBC. The ethnic minority, which speaks its own language and historically is different and culturally Muslim, though largely secular in practice today, is vastly different than the dominant Han Chinese who rule the country. The separatism that springs from this major difference is an affront to the communist government and to their vision of a harmonious and unified China. For the crime of being a Uyghur, men, women, and children from the ethnic group often find themselves in a series of re-education and labor camps that work to erase their culture from the Middle Kingdom, the New York Times reported. Evidence of this cultural genocide has appeared on American shores in the form of products that appear to have been made by the Uyghur people. China's crimes, both
and the Uyghurs, remember?
Uyghur, yeah.
I think of them, they're not we people, but they're we people in
yes.
the way they're being mistreated. We've heard allegations, too, that there are organ, what can we say, murders to get their organs.
Yes, that's been a persistent rumor.
Rumor.
And may very well be true. And finishing up this article, China's crimes, both against its own citizens and the world, are becoming harder to ignore by the day. Thankfully, this resurfaced video and a renewed interest in China's sickening behavior could mean the country will soon have to answer for the genocide of its own people. Now, moving on, we have another emergency broadcast, COVID Danger Ahead. First, an article by the Associated Press from New York City, Profile of a Killer, Unraveling the Secrets of the Deadly New Coronavirus.
And Lou, we have to say that we're doing this again amidst this backdrop of some strange conservative patriot broadcasters who have never rescinded their absurd view that the coronavirus is a hoax. So we're going to be getting into that a lot more. We have a lot of information, and you will understand by the end of this program why we say COVID, beware, danger ahead.
This is by Adam Geller and Malcolm Ritter. What is this enemy? 7 months after the first patients were hospitalized in China battling an infection doctors had never seen before, the world's scientists and citizens have reached an unsettling crossroads. Quote, it's like we're in a battle with something that we can't see, that we don't know, and we don't know where it's coming from, said Vivian Castro, a nurse supervisor at St. Joseph's Medical Center in Yonkers, just north of New York City, which struggled with its caseload this spring. Castro has treated scores of infected patients before she, too, was hospitalized for the virus in April, then spent 2 weeks in home quarantine. As soon as she returned to the emergency room for her first shift, she rushed to comfort yet another casualty, a man swallowing the few words he could muster between gasps of air. Said Castro, quote, it just came back, that fear. I just wanted to tell him not to give up, unquote. The coronavirus is invisible, but seemingly everywhere. But it has reached around the globe faster than any pandemic in history. COVID-19 was not even on the world's radar in November. But it has caused economic upheaval echoing the Great Depression, while claiming more than 580,000 lives. In the United States alone, the virus has already killed more Americans than died fighting in World War I. Even those figures don't capture the pandemic's full sweep. 9 of every 10 students worldwide shut out of their schools at one point. More than 7 million flights grounded. Countless moments of celebration and sorrow. Weddings and graduations, baby showers and funerals put off, reconfigured because of this virus and the worries about the safety from it. In short, the coronavirus has re-scripted nearly every moment of daily life. The new coronavirus is roughly 1,000 times narrower than a human hair, but scrutinized through an electron microscope, it is clear this enemy is well-armed. Coronaviruses, including the newest one, are named for the spikes that cover their surfaces. Like a crown, or corona in Latin. Using those club-shaped spikes, the virus latches on to the outer wall of a human cell, invades it, and replicates, creating viruses to hijack more cells. Finding a way to block or bind the virus, the spikes, and you can stop the virus. Once inside a human cell, the virus's RNA, or genetic code, commandeers its machinery, providing instructions to make thousands of virus copies. But the coronavirus has a weakness, an outer membrane that can be destroyed by ordinary soap. That neutralizes the virus, which is why health experts emphasize the need to wash hands. Like organisms, viruses evolve, searching for traits that will ensure survival, said Charles Marshall, a professor of paleontology at the University of California. If you've had some innovation, you get into some new environment, you get into a human, and you do well, you're going to proliferate, Samantha Marshall said. There are hundreds of coronaviruses, but just 7 known to infect human beings. 4 are responsible for some of the common colds. But in 2002, a virus called SARS, for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome, spread from China to sicken about 8,000 people worldwide, killing more than 700. Another coronavirus called Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, identified in 2012, spread to humans through camels. The new coronavirus, though, has captivated scientists' attention unlike any in decades.
And Lou, we interject again to remind our listeners of the Divided Kingdom. And by the way, please visit our website, DividedKingdomRadio.com. DividedKingdomRadio.com. Soon you'll see some changes there. I've been telling you all to go to read my essay on 5G, and inadvertently we didn't realize when our old website was changed into a new website, that disappeared. So probably within 4 to 5 days, you'll begin to see new articles by Lou and me, and you will probably be able to locate the 5G essay. So we are revamping, and we are really trying to come to a new level. And when I interrupted you, Lou, you were telling about these elements of former coronaviruses. And we have to remember now that we're reminding our listeners, in past programs, we talked about Dr. Luc Montagnier, and he was a Nobel Prize-winning scientist who discovered the HIV virus. And in his analysis, he says it was bioengineered and that it has elements of HIV as well as elements of SARS, and that agreed with some eminent Indian scientists whose findings were taken off the social networks. They disappeared rather quickly. We have others saying that it was bioengineered. Of course, Dr. Boyle, Francis Boyle, who helped with the proliferation treaties, non-proliferation treaties, I believe, of this type of bioweapon warfare during the H.W. Bush years, and a treaty that was later put under the UN. He also says that he's in agreement there with Montagnier that this virus came out of a laboratory and it was given gain of function. So you see, it can even more easily put those spikes, that corona thing of spikes. If you want to see a picture of that, you should visit naturalnews.com. They have articles sometimes that show this corona spike. It's very impressive. So, Lou, now, what is the rest of this story? This is a very good description of the enemy we're all facing.
Yes, it is. Continuing on, with more than 100,000 commercial flights a day ferrying tourists, business travelers, and students around the globe, the new virus spread rapidly and virtually invisibly, said medical historian Mark Honigsbaum, author of the Pandemic Century, 100 Years of Panic, Hysteria, and Hubris. He said, quote, by the time we woke up to the outbreak in Italy, it had been there for weeks, if not months. Soon after the first case in Wuhan, Chinese tourists with the virus traveled to France. But doctors there reported recently that a fishmonger contracted the disease even earlier than that, from an unknown source. On January 21st, the first confirmed U.S. case was reported in Washington State and a man who had traveled to Asia. Quote, if one person coming in from China, or it's one person coming in from China, and we have it under control, it's going to be fine, President Donald Trump said at the time. 10 days later, he blocked entry to most travelers from China. But genetic analysis of samples taken from New York patients showed most of the virus present arrived from Europe instead, and took root in February, well before anyone thought about quarantining after a trip to Madrid, London, or Paris. Since February, when Dr. Daniel Griffin began treating patients suspected of having COVID-19, he's cared for more than 1,000 people with the disease, first noted for attacking the lungs. But the infection certainly does not stop there. Quote, I am actually shocked, said Griffin, a specialist in infectious diseases at New York's Columbia University Medical Center. This virus seems to leave nothing untouched. Scientists are getting a handle on the many ways the disease affects the body, but it's a scramble. The lungs are indeed ground zero. Many patients find themselves gasping for breath, unable to say more than a word or two. Even after 5 days in the hospital, Vivian Castro, the nurse who became infected, said she returned home struggling for air.
And again, listeners, we invite you to go back to listen to our past programs at DividedKingdomRadio.com and visit the archive section. And if anything is never quite up to date on past shows, past programs, in the written text, you can still go to the archives, and we believe that they are now functioning well again. And you can listen to some of those programs in mostly, I'd say, June and July. in which we got into a lot of the technical things. For instance, in older people, there is some thinking that they are more prone to inflammatory cytokine storms. In other words, there might not be as severe a reaction in the body of a younger person or in children, but this cytokine storm sets up this terrible inflammation in the lungs, and then the people are put on ventilators, and that's pretty much the end of many people. And we also had recent information that the thymus gland becomes shriveled when people are older, and that it is one of the key T-cell makers in the body. And that is one of the prime, what shall we say, policemen in the body, immune policemen, that would go after the COVID-19. So a lot of these things are elements. Actually, we go back even farther, and there was some thinking, articles at Natural News, that perhaps the 5G that was put into the New York City neighborhoods in 2017, and a lot of people had health worries and complaints then, as well as in Wuhan, 5G was there, and those seemed to be the hotbed centers. Were they set up in their lungs for a more drastic kind of COVID-19, and one that took down their defenses more quickly, because there were certain things that the 5G actually did. There are certain aspects that are defensive in the lungs, and people with COPD, you know, the chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, they are weakened in that area too, so they'd have to be more careful. We heard about Roger Stone. Lou will be talking about him. Lifelong asthmatic condition. He would have been probably done for in that prison with the COVID. Go ahead, Lou.
Yes, continuing on, Miss Castro, the lady who was the nurse that had been herself a victim of the COVID.
Yes, and you had just said that she went back to work still breathless.
That's right. She says, "I climbed two flights of stairs to my room, and I felt like I was going to die," she said. The reason why becomes clear in autopsies of those who have died, some with lungs that weigh far more than usual. Under a microscope, evidence of the virus destruction is even more striking. When Dr. Sanjay Mukhopadhyay examined autopsy samples from a 77-year-old Oklahoma man, he noted changes to the microscopic sacs in the patient's lungs. In a healthy lung, oxygen passes through the thin walls of those sacs into the bloodstream. But in the Oklahoma patient, the virus had turned the sac walls so thick with debris that oxygen was blocked. The thickened walls, quote, were everywhere, unquote, preventing the lungs from sustaining the rest of the body, said the doctor of Ohio's Cleveland Clinic. Autopsies reveal, quote, what the virus is exactly doing inside the patient's body, said Dr. Desiree Marshall, a pathologist at the University of Washington, who recently examined the heart of a Seattle man who died from the disease. She said, quote, each autopsy has a chance to tell us something new, and those insights from the bodies of the dead could lead to more effective treatment of the living. The coronavirus, though, keeps raising fresh questions. It left the hearts of two men in their 40s recently treated by Griffin, flaccid and unable to pump enough blood. Some younger people have arrived in emergency rooms suffering strokes caused by blood clotting, another calling card. Kidneys and livers fail in some patients, and blood clots put limbs at risk of amputation. Some patients hallucinate or have trouble maintaining balance. Some get a treatable paralysis in arms or legs. Many have diarrhea but often don't mention it until Griffin asks. Their explanation, quote, that's the least of my problems when I can't breathe, unquote. Initially, doctors often put patients on ventilators if their blood oxygen levels dropped, but death rates were so high they are now trying other strategies first, like turning patients on their stomachs, which can help them breathe. The truth is that hospital workers are learning as they go, sometimes painfully.
And again, Lou, we have to recall the huge big pharma cover-up that would prevent hydroxychloroquine, and sometimes connected with azithromycin, ZPAC, as good tools to help people the latter effects of the cytokine storms. A lot of people got well, and there was a huge cover-up and a desire to promote remdesivir, a drug that many have said had some harmful effects. So largely now, hydroxychloroquine has been vindicated. There have been some very large studies that have shown that it did help the people. But you and I are here because we're warning people tonight. There's a lot more yet we have to tell you. You must beware of these coming rush-through vaccines. Lou, continue the story.
Yes. And here we have a quote from Dr. Stuart Moser, a cardiologist, hospitalized himself in New York in March after he was infected. He said, quote, "Every patient that I see, I think, that could have been me," unquote. He recalls fearing that he might be put on a ventilator and wondering if he'd ever see his family again. Now back at work, he said much of what he and his colleagues have learned about the virus's myriad effects enables them only to treat patients' symptoms. He said, quote, "It's difficult because they have so many problems and there are so many patients. And you just want to do the right thing. Give people the best chance to get better." With states and counties, and I should say countries, reopening in the face of an ongoing pandemic, it's even more crucial to find solutions. At least the last few months has spotlighted the most critical questions. Can people who have been infected with the disease get it again? Dr. Anthony Fauci, the U.S. government's top infectious disease expert, has said that having the disease once should confer some degree of immunity. But it's not clear how much or for how long, or what levels or types of antibodies people must have to protect them against future disease. In some people, or if some people harbor the virus without symptoms, how can we block transmission? The reality is that many infected people will never feel symptoms or get sick. That means temperature checks and other strategies based on symptoms won't be enough to stop it. Instead, many experts believe widespread testing is needed to find silent carriers, isolate them until they are no longer contagious, and track down those that may have been infected. Masks and distancing can help spread infection and slow the spread of the virus. Will researchers find medicines that can be used to treat the disease? Hundreds of studies are underway, testing existing medicines and experimental ones.
And I think that's a good overview there, Lou, of what's going on. And now we'll move to another doctor who survived COVID-19, and he's bewildered by public disregard. And again, we have to ask, is this nothing? Is it the common cold? Is it a hoax, as some patriot broadcasters have said? We'll hear more about that later. But this was an AP article, Sunday, July 19th. The headline was, "Doctor Who Survived COVID-19 Bewildered by Public Disregard." And this was in Birmingham, Alabama. Dr. Michael Sogg spends much of his time treating patients fighting for their lives and working with colleagues who are overwhelmed and exhausted by the relentless battle against the COVID-19 pandemic. And I would interject here that I had another article that I would shorten. The headline was, "Emergency Room Swamped as Virus Surges in Some U.S. States." And we know that in Texas, in Florida, Arizona, these are states that this is happening in. And we get conflicting reports. There are some health professionals who say there are not enough ICU beds and that these emergency rooms are just being swamped. So as we get varied data on that, we have to look at it all and pray for discernment. For instance, there was Dr. Allison Haddock of the Baylor College of Medicine, and she said she's worked in emergency rooms since 2007. "We're doing our best, but we're not in ICU, and that patients are waiting hours and hours to get admitted," she said, "and the least sick people are lying in beds in halls to make rooms for more seriously ill." So now back to the first article. I want to discuss this Dr. Michael Sogg. He's going into this different world when he walks out the door of his Alabama clinic. One where many don't wear masks, keep their distance from others, or even seem aware of the intense struggling thing that we're in, being waged against this virus that has cost about 140,000 lives nationwide and made so many, including this doctor, seriously ill. The disconnect is devastating. Quote, it's a mixture of emotions, from anger to being demoralized to bewilderment to frustration, Dr. Sogg said. Confirmed cases of COVID-19 have increased, an average of more than 1,500 a day over the past week in Alabama, bringing the total to more than 62,100 since the pandemic began in March. At least 1,230 people have died, and health officials say fewer than 15% of the state, and again, that's Alabama, its intensive care beds are available for new patients. Some hospitals are completely out of room. And it's not just an Alabama problem. About 250 miles from Birmingham, Dr. Chad Dowell warns that his hospital in tiny Indianola, Mississippi, is filling up, and so are others, making it difficult to locate beds for the sickest patients, even as people dictate and debate on social media whether the pandemic is real. So, you know, we could go on and on about this sharp increase of virus cases in Alabama. And where Dr. Sogg lives in Birmingham, he said it has been common to see fewer than half the people inside stores wearing masks. The doctor said he got particularly dispirited recently after stopping by a restaurant on the way home from work to pick up a takeout order of sushi. There were as many as 60 people inside, he said. So, you know, we're going to get into a lot of things tonight that are ramifications. And there is a headline here from Adriana Cohen's syndicated column, and I believe this was in July. Perhaps this was about a week ago. Reopening schools a must. And, of course, she wrote that lengthy time away from school and associated interruption of supported services often results in social isolation, making it difficult for schools to identify and address important learning deficits, as well as child and adolescent physical or sexual abuse, substance use, depression, and suicidal ideation. And she says we shouldn't be banning kids from going to school. Again, we have this idea that children do not get the virus, and children do not give it to anyone. And so we're going to look into this a little more closely from some other viewpoints later. And now I believe we move back. We're getting into our actual news articles, Lou, again.
Yes, they always say no young people get very sick with COVID. Elizabeth, you and I keep bringing up the case of the lacrosse star player Jack Elliott. He was 25. He got so sick with COVID, he was airlifted to the University of Pennsylvania medical facilities. He did survive. Now, here is another case, this time a young woman who was a COVID victim. The headline says, coronavirus patient 24, who was, quote, close to death, unquote, leaves Texas hospital after 79 days. And this was from Fox News, written by Vandana Rambaran. A 24-year-old coronavirus patient who was hospitalized for nearly 3 months and placed in a ventilator with, quote, dismal odds, unquote, of survival, was released from a Texas hospital Wednesday. I saw a light, Paola Castillo said, while recuperating after 79 days at Medical City North Hills in Dallas, according to a hospital press release. And she said, quote, that light was God telling me it was time to wake up, unquote. Castillo was admitted to the emergency department on April 27th after experiencing difficulty breathing, a cough, and fever for 6 days prior. Her symptoms worsened and she was placed on a ventilator in the first 24 hours after being admitted to the hospital.
And Lou, she was not 70 years old. She was not 65. What was she?
24. 24 years old. Healthcare workers told her husband and her mother that she was in a touch-and-go situation. Castillo told CBS affiliate DFW that she believes that she contracted the virus while working at the bank and never thought she could be affected by the outbreak of COVID-19, which has infected 307,572 Texas citizens and killed 3,735 others up to date. The state has been grappling with a resurgence of new cases due to the lack of social distancing precautions and unwillingness by some to wear a mask. and some hospitals have reported bed space swollen beyond capacity due to the uptick in hospitalizations. Mrs. Castillo said, quote, maybe if I would have just listened and worn a mask, just a simple thing, I would have avoided all this, unquote. She was slowly weaned off the ventilator, but when she awoke, her ability to talk, swallow, walk, and perform other physical functions had deteriorated, requiring weeks of physical therapy, the hospital said. Castillo ventured outside to feel the rain after 67 days inside the hospital. She took her first steps since being admitted on July 3rd and has since tested negative for the coronavirus, doctors said. Dr. Andrea Morian, director of Rehabilitation Services at Medical City North Hills, said in a statement, quote, what we are doing right now is at the heart of what it is to be human. What the care team has done for even this one patient is a mark of a life well lived and a purpose served. This is a single patient. The impact of our teams have on so many more right now is overwhelming, unquote. And now, Elizabeth, I believe,
back
to you.
I think that you have something about New York City next, and Governor Cuomo, don't you have something there about
him? I do, yes.
Let's pick this up. We saw this interesting poster on television. It was New York Tough. And if this isn't a portrait of a narcissist, I my name isn't Elizabeth Cuppet Caverly.
Yes, all right. Well, the headline says, traveling to New York, expect to have a papers, please encounter with coronavirus contact tracers. This appeared on Natural News' website Tuesday, July 21st, 2020, written by Ethan Huff. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, whose Twitter page still has an image of him riding on a float at a previous year's Pride Parade, has issued an emergency health order that states all travelers to the Empire State from other states will need to, quote, provide their contact information upon arrival, unquote, to contact tracers. In an alleged effort to stymie the spread of the Wuhan coronavirus, Cuomo is ordering that all out-of-state travelers, quote, from designated high COVID states, unquote, must comply with his demands or else, quote, receive a summons with a $2,000 fine, unquote. He also said, we're serious about enforcing quarantine. He concluded, apparently deaf to the tone of his authoritarian decree. As is being reported, New York City saw its first 24-hour period with no new cases of the Wuhan coronavirus the other day, which would seem to imply that now is the time to end the lockdowns. But this is not what is happening, thanks to Cuomo. Instead of reopening the city and getting its economy going once again, Cuomo is instead pushing for more quarantines and more lockdowns, deterring travelers from coming to the city under the threat that they will be told, papers please, before being allowed to enter. Keep in mind that the same day Cuomo made this announcement is when the New York City Mayor's Office tweeted that no new Wuhan coronavirus, that is COVID-19, cases had been detected in the 24 hours prior. Mayor Bill de Blasio even gave a press conference announcing the good news. As to be expected, Cuomo received considerable backlash on Twitter for once again playing dictator. One user made the sarcastic implication that New York City's lofty $2,000 fines are going to be used towards defending the city against the barrage of lawsuits that are sure to come. Quote, thank you for treating this seriously now that New Yorkers are finally in more danger than people in other states are from them, wrote the Aldous Huxley's ghost account in response to Cuomo's tweet. Do have one question. Are those $2,000 fines going to go toward paying off the inevitable lawsuits coming from families of your nursing home victims? Another user pointed out the obvious hypocrisy of Cuomo failing to mention how the George Floyd protests likely contributed to the spread of the Wuhan coronavirus. Rather than talk about any of this, Cuomo is instead choosing to punish innocent, non-criminal travelers by subjecting them to forced quarantine upon arrival. Asked another, quote, will you pay a fine for sending elderly COVID patients to nursing homes, essentially signing thousands of death sentences? On and on, the criticisms went with not a peep of support for Cuomo's mandate from virtually anyone, Many told the governor that they will not forget this coming election time, the implication being that Cuomo is on his way out, if they have anything to say about it. Meanwhile, the governor has reportedly partnered with two churches in Houston, Texas, to establish alleged Wuhan coronavirus testing sites. Northwest Houston's Fallbrook Church, along with Southwest Houston's Higher Dimension Church, will both be testing up to 1,000 people per day with the help of more than 20 healthcare workers from New York who were sent there at Cuomo's bidding. Cuomo stated, quote, "When New York went through the unprecedented challenge and unimaginable tragedy of COVID-19's apex in the state, states throughout the country provided supplies, ventilators, and personnel during our time of greatest need. Now that New York's numbers have stabilized, we're returning the favor."
And what did you think, Lou, about this draconian kind of visionary Walter Mitty kind of thing, that he will keep all of these travelers from other states? He will identify them. He will keep them out?
Well, I tell you what, I used to travel three or four times a year up to see my elderly parents in Massachusetts, coming from the Washington, D.C. area. If you've ever driven from the south up to New York City, you have two or three choices. You can go the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel, the George Washington Bridge, and the New Jersey Turnpike. When you get up near New York City, it's eight lanes, and sometimes all eight of those lanes are filled. And you can imagine the traffic backups that this would
cause. It's going to take a lot of stormtroopers for eight lanes, isn't it?
You would need thousands of men, and that doesn't count all the little roads coming in from Connecticut, from Pennsylvania into New York
City.
Then
how about the other direction? Did you say something about the Tappan Zee Bridge?
Yes, that's up the river. Now, that might be from New York to New York.
But you know,
I'm not
there
sure.
Are probably going to be some renegades from Connecticut, from Pennsylvania, from Delaware, who are inside. They got in. They sneaked inside in New York, so they're going to be on the Tappan Zee. It's really ridiculous.
Oh, you might even find a few from Massachusetts.
Yes,
my mistake.
I guess we'll move on now from that. And so now we have Walmart, headline to require all shoppers to wear face masks. And, of course, Lou has something to say about that, I think, later, some of the ridiculousness of some of the people. That may be in a little article that you'll find on our website soon at DividedKingdomRadio.com. The children of America, and I am talking about many of the adults, we think that God, in his mercy, pities them, because they're so stupid. They're so pitiable. And I'm going to just say, this woman who was wearing a pair of her husband's briefs, this is a kind of rebellion. At the same time, in Hosea, it says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge." That's why we're here, and we ask you to tell others, especially your Christian friends, who need to wake up and see there's grave danger in many, many areas, from the leftists, from the BLM, George Soros-sponsored groups, the Antifa groups, the Weatherman Redux. So this is not that great a thing, not that big, that Walmart is requiring the shoppers to wear the face masks. But we do know that, in our opinion, people even rue that they didn't do it, like that young bank teller that Lou read about. And we had another headline, even back as far as June 15th, Ralph Flores at Natural News, a town in Germany prevented 40% of coronavirus infections by masking up. And here's just a little sample of that. A new study that looked at the effects of face masks on the spread of the coronavirus in a town of Germany revealed that using face covering can reduce transmission by as much as 40%. The study, which was authored by the ICA Institute of Labor Economics, analyzed the city of Jena in the central province of Thuringia. During the height of the coronavirus outbreak in Germany, the city was among the first places to adopt the use of masks, making face coverings mandatory for citizens riding trains, buses, and going into stores as early as April 6th. The rest of Germany followed suit, with most states requiring face masks in public by late April. According to the researchers, new infections in the city, which has a population of 108,000, almost disappeared after face masks became compulsory. The authors compared Jena's trajectory with a synthetic control that used weighted average sample data from other towns and cities in Germany. This created a synthetic town that was similar to Jena, but adopted compulsory face masks later than April 6th. After April 6th, the team's data noted a 13% drop in new infections in Jena within the first 10 days compared to the control group. According to the authors, the gap in caseloads between Jena and the synthetic control unit continued to widen, with Jena lowering their new infections by 25% within 20 days. The control group, in comparison, saw their numbers rise in the same period. By adopting face masks early, the city of Jena was able to curb its daily infections by 40%, the authors wrote in their report. And we could go on there, you see. There were lower infections after face masks became mandatory also in Texas and California. And this suggests that the infection data analyzed from Italy and New York City, that the trends before and after the masks, you see, were made mandatory, tells us that story. Based on their report, which was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, both locations, you see, that's Texas and California, saw their infection rates go down after the measures were put in place. We really must get to some more things that are so important tonight, and I think we now need to go to the article that Mike Adams of Natural News addressed this thing, this important thing that we've been bringing up about the right-wing patriot community scoffing at this pandemic as if it's not real. It's a hoax. And this is a very important article. Lou, do you have the beginning of it?
I do, yes.
All right.
And the very title is "Those Who Call the Coronavirus a Hoax Are Making a Huge Mistake."
Let's go into that right now.
Yes, and he offers 12 questions to reveal the truth that no one dare utter. Friday, July 17th, 2020, by Mike Adams. There's no question that elements of the coronavirus pandemic are being wildly exaggerated by most left-leaning mayors, governors, and media pundits in order to punish America with economically destructive lockdowns, all in the hope of removing Trump from office, it turns out. We've even documented one of the most egregious deception efforts involving the Florida Department of Health, which has been rigging lab reports to claim 100% of those tested are positive for COVID-19. But it's a mistake to leap to the conclusion that because left-wing operators hope to exaggerate the infections, hospitalizations, and deaths, that therefore the entire pandemic is a complete hoax and no one is dying from the coronavirus. That's where the thinking is dangerously misguided. And it's already leading to complacency. Now, let me skip down to some of the questions that Mike has prepared here.
We don't need to skip too much. I want you to give us that whole part about the other news organizations that were reporting it to be a hoax. So let's just go on with what you had there.
All right. From Breadion.com, which is one of Mike's websites. From their videos on Breadion.com to InfoWars broadcast, we repeatedly hear many people in independent media claiming the coronavirus is a quote-unquote hoax. They say there is no virus, and all the infections, hospitalizations, and deaths have been faked, they claim. It's all a grand global theatrical production involving hundreds of thousands of nurses, doctors, and coroners, all to trick the world into lockdowns that have no real justification, they tell us. This has become the dominant narrative in alternative media. It's easy to see reports or to find reports of deaths being improperly attributed to COVID-19, or even stories of false positives incorrectly flagging people with COVID-19 when they really don't have it. But the logic leap that many in the alternative media have taken is assuming that since some deaths were faked, therefore all deaths must have been faked. Many of the same independent media sources that are reporting the coronavirus to be a hoax, also reported on how Obama's NIH under Dr. Fauci directed millions of dollars to the Wuhan Virology Lab to fund gain-of-function research. If the coronavirus is a hoax, and there is no coronavirus, then isn't the Obama-Fauci-NIH story also completely bogus? In fact, there are at least a dozen serious questions or contradictions that those who claim the coronavirus is a hoax cannot answer. Much of their reporting has been self-contradicting to the point where believing their news requires that you alternatively embrace the existence of the virus or denounce the virus as fake, depending on the day of the week. But the coronavirus can't be real on Monday, fake on Tuesday, real again on Wednesday, and so on. Any explanation of coronavirus-related observations must have, evolved, deliver consistency. Unless, of course, you believe in transviralism, where viruses can magically pop into existence as easily as a biological man, claiming he's a woman, so he can compete on the women's college wrestling team. For the record, we have consistently understood the coronavirus to be a very real threat, and we haven't wavered from day to day.
And that's natural news.
That's correct, yes, Mike Adams in particular. While we acknowledge that much of the coronavirus testing is highly inaccurate, and hundreds of testing facilities seem to be deliberately finding all tests to be positive in their results, even all that fraud doesn't mean the coronavirus isn't really impacting other people. In watching the coronavirus coverage on this issue by others, we've noticed 12 questions or contradictions that have repeatedly surfaced. See the full list below and ask yourself this important question as you read through the list. Do logic and reason still apply in our universe? Just as the radical left claims biological sex doesn't exist, and a man can become a woman at any moment by making a wish, much of the conservative independent media has an eerily similar view about the coronavirus, alternately claiming it's either real or fake, depending on what story they want to cover on that particular day. Obviously, men can't become women, and men can't have babies. In the same way, the coronavirus can't be both real and fake at the same time. So which is it? Read the questions and decide for yourself. And here they are, the 12 questions. Question number one. Many in the alternative media reported on a New York City nurse who filmed undercover video and blew the whistle on how New York City hospitals were killing patients by rooming non-infected patients with coronavirus-infected patients, allowing transmissions to occur. But how can non-infected patients be killed by the coronavirus if that's a hoax? Question number two. Alternative media outlets that are currently reporting the coronavirus to be a hoax are also reporting on how the mainstream media lied and covered up the story of how hydroxychloroquine can effectively and affordably treat coronavirus patients. If the coronavirus is a hoax, then what exactly is hydroxychloroquine treating? Question three. Many in the independent media are now pushing mask hysteria. That's in quotes. Mask hysteria. And claiming that wearing a mask causes death by asphyxiation or carbon dioxide poisoning. Yet Asian cultures, Taiwan, Japan, China, Korea, Singapore, etc., have been wearing masks in public for decades, without a single recorded event of someone dying from wearing a mask. Surgeons wear masks during surgery without passing out, and masks are routinely worn by construction workers to filter particulate matter, such as sawdust, drywall dust, and paint. If these masks have been safe and effective for more than 50 years, how did masks suddenly and naturally become deadly and toxic in the last 3 months? Did the laws of physics change? Question number four. Coronavirus pandemic skeptics claim all the infections and deaths are faked. But if all the deaths are faked, then why did those who are faking the deaths decide to keep dropping the daily death numbers from mid-April through the end of June? If they're faking all the deaths, then wouldn't they want to keep faking more and more of them to make the pandemic look worse and worse? Why would they fake fewer deaths over time? Question five. Many independent media outlets that originally reported the coronavirus was a, quote, genetically engineered biological weapon, unquote, designed to depopulate the planet, are now reporting it's a hoax. But then they simultaneously report that Obama's NIH under Fauci directed money to the Wuhan virology lab that built the weapon in the first place. If the COVID-19 is a hoax, then there is no story about Obama and Fauci funding a biological weapon gain-of-function program in China. How can both be true? Question number six. In June, it was widely reported across the independent media that coronavirus infections cause the body cells to, quote, sprout tentacles, unquote, that allow the virus to attack adjacent cells and infect them. This was widely reported as more evidence that the virus was a genetically engineered biological weapon. An example of the coverage in Zero Hedge said, quote, there are long strings that poke holes in other cells, and the virus passes through the tube from cell to cell. our hypothesis is that these speed up infection, unquote. So how can the coronavirus sprout tentacles if it doesn't exist and is a total hoax? Question 7. As Gary Heaven recently wrote in a Natural News article about coronavirus treatments at work, the common inhaler anti-inflammatory drug, budesonide, works extremely well to treat and cure COVID-19 infections. A well-known doctor, Dr. Richard Bartlett, has been actively promoting the treatment as an alternative to expensive big pharma drugs and vaccines, proving that he's not a pawn of the drug cartels. If budesonide, budesonide successfully treats patients who have COVID-19, curing them and allowing them to leave the hospital and return to normal life, then what is budesonide treating if the coronavirus is a hoax? How can anyone simultaneously claim the virus is a hoax and also claim the media is suppressing cures that work to treat it? Question number 8. Coronavirus skeptics explain the coronavirus deaths are faked in the United States because hospitals receive extra funding for every death that's considered coronavirus-related. Thus, people who die from other causes are said to have died from coronavirus, so that hospitals can receive extra funds from Medicare. But Medicare doesn't pay hospitals in Italy, Brazil, Mexico, or Russia. And the same financial incentives don't exist in most countries.
And that's good, Lou. We'll go quickly because I want you pull up the Moderna vaccine, the newest information on it. But now question 9 was, if the initial lockdowns didn't work, then why did coronavirus daily deaths plummet soon after the lockdowns went into effect? Question 10, we should be terrified of masks. So if it's not real, why worry about the masks? Question 11, if it isn't real, why are many publishers telling people to take vitamin C, vitamin D? Question 12, if masks are so dangerous and kill people, then why are so many pro-liberty people perfectly fine with wearing Guy Fawkes masks? What about Halloween masks? So we could go on and on. It's very, very important to know this thing is real and you want to take care. And now we told you that AstraZeneca and Moderna use fetal cell lines. And I believe they one of them is from the Netherlands back in 1972. There was a baby that they used this. So you have to really pray about this. Pfizer, which ran vaccine experiments on Nigerian children, gets fast-track approval for its coronavirus vaccines. And we see this frenzy being whipped up by all the medical people who consult on Fox News. We're getting this push for warp speed for these pre-filled syringes, millions, maybe 300 million of them. But what about Moderna? It's in the lead. They're all trumping it. Or can it be safe? Lou, let's hear about that for the last article.
Yes, this was Thursday, July 16th, also by Mike Adams, Natural News. The widely hyped Moderna coronavirus vaccine caused adverse effects, side effects, in over 50% of clinical trial participants, including, quote, fatigue, chills, headache, myalgia, and pain at the injection site, unquote. While it generates antibodies in the short term, new studies indicate these antibodies fade very quickly, rendering the vaccine pointless in the face of the coronavirus pandemic. The side effects of the Moderna messenger RNA vaccine are documented in a study published in the New England Journal of Medicine, a discredited pro-pharma junk science rag that lies in favor of Big Pharma in every possible way. And unpublished, or as published on medicine.news, the NEJM was recently caught up with the Lancet in a junk science scheme that sought to discredit hydroxychloroquine through the use of fabricated data that was published in both journals and later retracted. The new study is entitled An mRNA Vaccine Against SARS-CoV-2 Preliminary Report. It details the astonishing degree of side effects experienced by study subjects, revealing that over half of study participants reported at least one side effect. And they have a chart here that says this chart from the study also shows the side effects are dose-dependent, meaning the higher the injection dose, the higher the reported side effects, further strengthening the causal ties between the vaccine and the side effects. And Mike is a very detailed chart.
Get to more statistics quickly. The worst kinds of side effects and how many in the trials.
Notably, 100% of participants experienced headaches, local symptoms, and systemic symptoms, while nearly 100% experienced chills, myalgia, and fatigue during the
myalgia is muscle weakness.
Yes. Yeah. The study reveals that the vaccine becomes increasingly toxic with subsequent injections, meaning even at the first injection is relatively well handled by the body, the second injection can be significantly more dangerous.
And now what we've been hearing is, you see, this immunity, this positive immunity, seems to disappear and wane. And there have been voices who have said medically that we'll have to have almost continuous recurring shots. Now, can you picture what that's going to do to your body, getting the COVID vaccine not once, maybe six times a year? Who knows? But 100% of the read that again to us.
Yes, the second one, notably 100% of participants experienced headaches, local symptoms, and systemic symptoms, while nearly 100% experienced chills, myalgia, and fatigue during the second injections. And so the study reveals that the vaccine becomes increasingly toxic with subsequent injections. And the next paragraph is just what Elizabeth just said. Notably, with other studies now revealing that coronavirus antibodies fade quickly over the period of about 3 months, the messenger RNA vaccine from Moderna would have to be injected multiple times, perhaps as many as four times each year, in order to maintain high levels of antibodies. But with each injection, the vaccine becomes more toxic and produces more side effects. As the study authors conclude, quote, systemic adverse events were more common, that is, were more common after the second vaccination, particularly with a higher dose, unquote.
And now, Lou, we won't have a lot of time tonight to get to this, but we're going to have to get into the tyranny that's coming. Was it 78 people were locked in their apartment building in
that's
California?
That's right, in Ventura County,
Ventura,
California.
And this was through the local government. This is really something. So you will want to tune in next week. We will be getting into more of the takedown of our country with Antifa and BLM. And we will be getting into the tyranny aspects of this COVID situation. This is just terrible. These people were actually imprisoned. It's not too different from those Uyghurs being led into those cars, those whatever they were, cattle cars, box cars. No, we're here to stand against tyranny, and we hope that you will write to us at Lou Caverly, Post Office Box 28, Bethlehem, Maryland, 21609, and hear us on WWCR.com Thursday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern. You can also hear us at KStarTalkRadio.com Saturdays at 5 p.m., Sundays at 10 a.m. You can hear us at Liberty Works Radio Network, LWRN.net, Mondays at 5 p.m., repeating at 11 p.m. Tell others about our program. Good night.